The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, we've been waiting to get him for almost a year and a half. The man of 1,000 gigs. He's on the NFL Network. He's on NBC, the Sunday Night in America show. He's on Showtime inside the NFL. Now he's on the BS Report. What other gigs did I leave out, Chris Collinsworth?
Dad, part-time track coach. Other than that, you got it just about wrapped up. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Part-time track coach.
Oh, yeah. We won the state championship last year. I coached my daughter's team. I had two daughters on the team last year, and the school won the state championship, and I never had more fun in my whole life.
I left out Madden. You were on Madden 2009, right?
I don't know if everybody on the planet plays that game or not, but I have had more people come up to me and talk about that video game than talk about any game I've called, any broadcast I've been on. And most of them all say the same thing. They all go up and say, "Man, you are killing me on that Madden game. I can't. Why do you want to rip me on that Madden game?" And then they just start laughing because they love it whenever they're beating somebody, and I'm starting to talk trash about whoever's on the other side. But you cannot sit in that studio and do those lines. I mean, it's like 8 hours a day for 10 straight days, and you start to lose your mind. So after a while, you just got to find a way to keep yourself entertained.
Well, as somebody who, before I had two kids, I used to play Madden all the time. I used to actually get mad at fake Madden. You know, I'd go for it on 4th and 10, and Madden would say, you can't go for it here. This is ridiculous," or whatever he'd say. And I'd be like, "Hey, screw you, John. It's 4th down. It's a video game. I want to go for it. Leave me alone." Well, but yeah, so it takes 10 days to record that stuff?
Yeah, oh, man. You can imagine. It's like every possible situation. I mean, you go through and they go, "Okay, it's 3rd and 1 on the 35-yard line. You go for, you know, an outside play. Oh, the outside, and he didn't make it. Oh, now it's inside, and he didn't make it. Oh, they threw a pass, and they didn't make it." And then you go, "It's outside. Oh, great call. They made it. Oh, it's inside." I mean, it's like every conceivable situation that you can come up with, you have to have a line for it. And so, you know, they write a bunch of stuff, and I start, you know, I just start goofing off. You know, I just came in like, you know, "Hey, if you guys want me to do it, it's not like I'm breaking the bank doing this here. I just did this because I wanted my kids to be haunted by my voice for the rest of their lives." So
it's funny, you'll be remembered for this more than playing in a Super Bowl, which is a little frightening.
Oh, no question. Which I've been trying to forget about those two Super Bowls anyway, so that's for the best.
Well, one of the things I love about you is that you watch the tapes, and you make that clear because you always say, "Well, you know, I watch this on tape." How many tapes are you watching each week? I mean, do you watch 10 games a week, 8 games a week?
It just depends, you know, The funny thing about it is it's not, you know, when your vocation and your avocation are the same thing, it makes for a great life.
Right.
And then I coach my kid's football team, and my other kid plays high school football. And so I would go from watching tapes all day to my eighth graders practice, and then I come back and watch tapes. And then when I got a day off, I would go on every Friday night and I would watch the high school football game, or I would watch them practice. So there is nobody in the world that is a more limited person than I am. I mean, really, if it has something to do with football, I can have a conversation with anybody. If it's outside of that realm, I'm hurting. You know, that's the first 6 months every year. That's what I do. So,
well, it was a lucrative decision for you. So you get the tapes? Do they mail them to you, or is your TiVo just stacked with games and you have to zoom through them? Like, how does that work?
All of the above. I get the one thing I love, and I don't know if everybody knows what I'm talking about, but those shortcuts on DirecTV,
where they
do like the 30-minute version, no conversation in between, just play.
Yep.
So I watch those on Monday and Tuesdays, and then I get the tapes the one reason, well, not the one reason, but the, one of the reasons that I'm doing the games on the NFL Network is because once you get inside of that family, I put it in my contract that they had to send me the coach's tape.
Oh,
because,
I was going to ask you about that. Yes,
yeah,
so you
I'm
have
like a total
those.
Addict. You know, I could sit there and watch them all day. I love watching them. So I get those on Tuesday afternoon. So I watch the shortcuts until I get to the part where I get the game tapes, and then I watch the game tapes.
See, I think they're missing the boat on the coaches' tapes because they have all these different plans. They have the NFL package, they have the super fan package, they have the HD package. They should have the coaches' tape package for like $1,500. I swear to God, I would buy it. I can't think of anything better than watching the coaches' tapes.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, I think the reason they don't maybe is they don't want everybody who knows something about football second-guessing and critiquing or stealing ideas, or I don't know exactly why it is. But I always thought that they should at the very least have the coaches' tape show for each individual city, you know, where you go in there and you just essentially – you know, whoever it is, Mike Ditka in Chicago, he's going to take you through the game. He's going to break it down. Here's what they did right. Here's what they did wrong. Here's who played well, who didn't play well. So you get to see some offensive line play. You get to see some secondary play. I mean, that's the big thing when I'm calling the game. You know, I always think, all right, they just saw the guy run off tackle. I don't need to tell the guy at home. You know, he took the handoff and he went off tackle and made a nice move. Well, yeah, of course, moron. I just saw that. Tell me what I didn't see.
Right.
Tell me what happened in the secondary. Tell me what happened on the backside of the offensive line. Tell me what the wide receiver did to set him up this time so that next time he may go by him. And it's not that I know any more than anybody else, but I really don't watch the ball. You know, at one point, somebody, they were NBC, when they first hired John Madden, they came up with the idea that I was going to do play-by-play.
I remember this.
And so we did some practice games, and we did all this stuff. And I said, I can't do this. And they go, what are you talking about? And I said, in order to do play-by-play, you have to watch the ball. I never watch the ball. I mean, the ball sort of comes to me based on what happens on the play. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of times that I'm not watching the ball, and it's actually happened to me in broadcast sometimes where something obvious happens with the guy carrying the ball, or he fumbled it, you know, as soon as he got the handoff or something. And I look over at Bob Papa or whoever I'm doing the game, I go, what happened? I mean, really, because I'm not watching it. I'm watching everything but because I figure the guy at home's watching the ball.
I have tried to train myself to do that, but I think when you know, I have no football background. I played Pop Warner and that's it, and I love football, but it's very hard if you're not a football, like a diehard, it's in your blood, to not watch the ball. And I always find myself gravitating toward the QB or the running back or whoever and not seeing the things. Because now that they show these games in widescreen on HD, you can see more of the field.
Right.
And you can see, like, you know, probably a 10-yard buffer with the wide receivers and the cornerbacks, but I always forget to watch. But, you know, the other thing about the coaches' tape, I went to Super Bowl 36, which is Rams-Pats. Mm-hmm. I got to sit in the end zone. I had good seats for that game. And sitting in the end zone for a good NFL game, there's nothing like it. You can see everything. You see
no question. I mean,
all the receivers, everything. It's great.
If people ever really understood that. Now, the hard part is, obviously, is you could get stuck some game and the entire game's played on the opposite end of the field, and then, that's not much fun. But I had one time I met a lady who watched the game for the first time in the end zone, and she was all excited. She came up to me in a bar, actually, afterwards, and she goes, oh, my gosh, she says, I just watched the game for the first time in the end zone. He said, it was unbelievable, unbelievable. I said, when you guys were coming down towards our end of the field and I'm like in the fifth row down there, he said, you could look inside the helmets of the players and they almost look human in there. I go, no kidding, really, almost look like human beings in there. She just, I mean, you know, I think that people look at us as like some robots or something and they're out there playing the game. And they just get stunned that they're actually humans who screw up and do and say stupid things on the field.
Yeah. Well, I was in the end zone that Ty Law ran down when he caught the interception to make it 7-3 in that Rams game.
Oh, yeah.
And you could see that whole play unfolding. Vrabel comes in. You could see him coming in. You could see the pass hanging. You could see Law. It was amazing. The end zone football seats, to me, versus sitting at like the 50-yard line, it's no comparison. It's weird that the 50-yard line actually costs more money.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, too, that when I watch game tapes – like, I'm a total addict watching line play now, because I can kind of look at the secondary and the receivers and in a glance sort of tell what it is. Mm-hmm. But I really have to study line play to sort of understand. And I know I don't totally understand it, but and so I usually watch the wide angle view once, maybe twice, and then, but I'll find myself 7-8 times watching the end zone view for that very reason. You know, it's all about creating rushing lanes. It's all about finding throwing lanes. It's all about, oh, well, you know, like I saw a pass interference call that from the sideline looked like, oh, that's absolutely pass interference. He got there too early, knocked the guy over. Then they show the end zone version of it, and you could see the guy, his eyes never went off the ball, the defender. And did he run through the receiver? Yeah, he did. But he ran through it on a path to the ball, exactly what the back judge saw, and it wasn't pass interference. And I was like, I go, how cool is this that when you get immediately one angle than the other, that you can actually see the game in a way that only people on the field were able to watch it? And the greatest thing that was ever invented was the cable cam. The greatest thing ever.
Yep. XFL.
Because you're sitting right there. I mean, you get almost the quarterback's view of what's happening on a play.
You can thank Vince McMahon.
There you go.
That was the XFL.
My man.
The other great thing about the end zone is seeing the special teams and how, you know, when you have the camera from the 50, you can't see how they set stuff up and the blocking, and you can't see a lane opening. Like, you just can't. It's just kind of chaos. But on the flip side, I think the one good thing about having that look straight on, you know, straight down the line of scrimmage, is that you can kind of tell when one line is blowing the other line off the ball a little bit.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Giants, sure. Pats, you could kind of see, all right, the Giants, every player pushing them 3 yards back. This is bad.
Yeah, but you can also, from the end zone and that cable cam, you can see when they get guys isolated. You know, when Justin Tuck got isolated on the Patriots guards, it was over. Right. I mean, that was really what happened. They were able to occupy some of the other guys outside and then get their speed rushing defensive end type down on those guards, and that was the game. And actually, the worst part was the same thing happened in the first game that I actually broadcast, and I never picked it up once. And I was so mad at myself when I saw the game tape. I was like, you are a moron. How could you not have figured this? I mean, I knew that Tuck was giving them problems, but I didn't see how they, you know, had isolated him with players on the other players around him. And, you know, so it's like, no matter, even if you call the game, when you go back and you get a chance to study the game tape of it, you see a completely different game sometimes.
This is your first foray into the booth this year, right, for NFL Network? Or, I mean, the last 3 years. This was the first time
I did Fox games with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot.
But way before that, you know, back in the golden age of television, I did, I probably did about 8-10 years. I started with Notre Dame football, and I did a bunch of B-level and C-level and D-level games. And it was probably one of the great advantages that I had, was that I probably did 3 years of television before anybody ever saw me do anything. And if they had seen any of those first 3 years, I probably would be an attorney today. So it was not good. It was not a pretty thing for a while.
I'm an absolute idiot for not remembering the Buck Aikman Collinsworth combo. No, but you know what, though? I have two young kids, so I'm excused. I've lost like about 5,000 million brain cells in the last year.
It's called the dark ages, between like 0 and 5, you know. Those are the dark ages. You have no life at that point.
Hey, let's talk quickly some football. You know, I think maybe 3 weeks ago, we were all thinking Giants, Titans, these are the class of the league. Now it's a lot more wide open. I've been predicting this all year. This season reminded me of 2002, which we ended up with Oakland and Tampa. But it was one of those weird seasons where you just didn't know who was good. Right. And now it's like, I mean, you could say there are five contenders, and then there's like another five teams that are kind of lurking. We're not sure what to expect. You know, I feel like 10 teams are still in this. Who do you think is the favorite right now?
You know, it's a really difficult year because it was so easy for so long. You know, everybody were just, you know, it was Tennessee, it was the New York Giants and all that kind of stuff. But I've thought really from the beginning that there was one division that was the best, and that's the NFC East. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be really interesting for me watching the games this week because, yeah, the Giants got beat in back-to-back games.
Yeah,
they're trying to figure out what to do without Plaxico Burress. Now, McKenzie's gone on the offensive line. They get Jacobs back. You know, can they find a little bit of the magic again? But remember, the only two teams that beat them during this stretch were both NFC East teams. You know, they got beat by Dallas in Dallas, and they got beat by Philadelphia, you know, in New York. So now it comes down to, all right, now they're stepping out of the division. They're playing back at home. They've had a couple of weeks to adjust without Plexico. Can they get it back on track? Because right now it almost looks like the reverse of what happened a season ago. The one comment I made about halfway through the season is, it wouldn't surprise me at all. This is when Brad Johnson's playing quarterback for the Cowboys and all that. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Cowboys sneak into the playoffs, be the sixth seed, play the Giants in the first round of the playoffs in New York, and have a complete role reversal of what happened a season ago, where the Cowboys were 13-3, number one seed, home playoff games, all that stuff, and it just might flip around. And it's starting to look more and more like if the Cowboys can get in, or if the Eagles can get in, the way they're playing right now, you could have the hottest team and go on a run the way the Steelers did as a wild card back 3 years ago, and the way the Giants did a season ago.
Well, like always with this stuff, we can basically throw out September and October, and it just comes down to November and December, just whoever starts peaking at the right time. But I always found that the team that does the one thing the best, this is my little gambling strategy, the team that does the one thing the best usually ends up being the champs or getting damn close. So who do we think right now, out of all these contenders, which team does the one thing the best? Like last year it was the Giants. They rushed the passer. They did that better than anybody did anything else.
Well, if you have to say today who does something the best and what makes this game, I think, the most intriguing is Carolina runs the football the best right now. You know, they've got Jordan Gross. They have Jeff Otaw at the two tackles. They have a young kid, Ryan Khalil, who's playing great at center. This offensive line may well be better than the New York Giants offensive line at this point. They're running over people with a two-headed back system, and they have Steve Smith. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's because that's the same exact and a good defense that can rush the passer.
Yep.
Exact same formula that the New York Giants rode to the Super Bowl last year. So I think they're a dangerous team. My question is, are they ready for prime time? And can Jake get it done in a rough weather situation? I mean, because going in the Giants stadium in December is a different animal no matter how you want to break it down. And I personally have to see that one before I'm going to believe it. So I ended up picking the Giants in this game, but my brain is screaming at me, what are you doing? Because you're looking at the New York Giants before they lost Plexico Burress in the Carolina Panthers. So, you know, that is, I think it's one of the most intriguing games that we'll see in quite some time. And really, you can make the argument that the two Super Bowl teams may well come out of the winner of these two games this week, Pittsburgh and Tennessee, whoever gets home field there, and the Giants in Carolina, whoever wins there has home field as well. So I can't remember a time when so much was on the line in a game that was two games from the end of the regular season.
It's great. Hey, by the way, I would have reversed your questions about Carolina and led with Jake. I mean, he has burned it. He's burned so many fans and whoever, fantasy people. It's just, you just never know with him when it's going to turn. And that's why he's Jake the Snake.
Yeah, but you know what? When you get single coverage and when they run it the way they're running it right now, somebody is going to have to cover Steve Smith one-on-one.
Right.
And that's a tough matchup. I don't care who you are. Same thing when Plexico was in there last year. When they're running like that and you had Plexico out there, somebody had to cover him one-on-one, and they couldn't, and it cost them the Super Bowl the year before.
Right.
Somebody now has to cover Steve Smith one-on-one if they're going to shut down Carolina's running game, and I'm going to be interested to see who on that Giants team can get that done.
Well, our friend Mike Lombardi always points this out about how coaches handle tough situations or potentially team season-threatening situations with chemistry. And what the Panthers did with Steve Smith, where they suspended him for the two games, really seemed to like inject some sort of weird life into their whole season, you know?
Well,
like they were
just
like, we're not going to stand for this, and we're going to win without you, and if you want to join us, go ahead.
How about benching Donovan McNabb and what that did for the Eagles?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's the weirdest game in the world, and we were even talking about it today. Did all the controversy in Dallas last week actually make that football team better? You know, because now they knew going into that game, they lose that game, it is going to be a media destructive mode like we've never seen before. That team was going to get ripped from one side of town, one part of the nation to the other, yeah. And it galvanized them in some ways. You know, I mean, even if it was just a show to see Romo and Witten and T.O. and those guys all, you know, getting interviewed together. I mean, we're 2 days before they were, you know, I don't know, everybody denies it, but there was some kind of a confrontation in the locker room.
Yeah.
So sometimes it has to get ugly before it can get good, and we've seen it work a couple of times this year.
I was wondering if they were just going to send T.O. home and do the strategy of the 2002 Pats with Terry Glenn, or, you know, even what the Panthers did with Smith for two games. But at some point, you got to wonder, is can we make do with Roy Williams and Patrick Creighton and just, you know, just have better chemistry? Is this guy worth it to have on our team?
Well, their problem is Roy Williams is not playing. I watched the tape on Roy Williams. I'll give you my line. He is, I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if that's just the way he plays. He is not much of an asset for that team right now.
What about, was he ever good? Are we sure he was ever good?
I'm not so sure. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that was.
I mean, he was pretty good in college. I know that. And he's a little bigger, a little thicker. You know, I think he's got a little foot injury. I'm not sure, but I know one thing. He's getting paid more money than Terrell Owens right now, and I'm not so sure that it wasn't that, as opposed to Jason Witten and Tony Romo's relationship, that wasn't really stirring the drink last week.
Yes, and as we found out time and time again in sports or in any other community, if you bring in another guy and pay him more than the best guy you have, it's going to be trouble.
It's a little trouble.
That's not going to handle it very well.
It's a little trouble.
So out of all the sleepers, I hate to use the word sleepers, but the teams in the periphery, like I'm talking about like New England, Miami, I guess you have to include Arizona, even though they just look like they're a mess, but maybe Tampa, definitely Baltimore. Do you see any of those teams catching fire in January?
Well, you know, the issue is going to be, and I'm always leery of picking against the defensive teams.
Yep.
You know, Miami now has gone three straight weeks and without anybody scoring a touchdown on them. The Minnesota Vikings, and I know they just lost Pat Williams, and that's a deal, and I know that's a deal. But, you know, they still have Kevin Williams to help rush the passer and stop the run inside. So, you know, but that team now is getting play out of Tavares Jackson. They're starting to make big plays down the field.
You trust Tavares.
I mean, how do you figure? You know, I mean, it's you know, so, but you're asking for, you know, who's the sleeper? The team I don't like at all is Arizona.
Yep.
You know, I think that's a, you know, a total, there's no way in heck. But if Philadelphia, Dallas gets in, I definitely like them. And there's something about Bill Belichick, if he sneaks into these playoffs, that is a little frightening. You know, do you really want to, with a full week of preparation, to face whatever kind of game plan he might be able to put together? The question is, can they get in? Because even if they went out, they may not get in the playoffs this year.
Here's what I'm rooting for as a diehard Patriots fan. So we get the sixth seed after Dallas beats Baltimore. The Jets or Miami get the three seed, so we play them round one. Can win that game. Tennessee somehow steals the one seed. Like they somehow get it. Then all of a sudden we're playing in Tennessee in round two. I think the Pats could win that game.
You know? I do too.
So all of a sudden now we're in the AFC Championship game potentially. Let's hope we're playing in Pittsburgh. I feel like Pittsburgh, Lombardi and I have talked about this, Pittsburgh almost has more of an advantage on the road than at home because of how fast their defense is and they had that slap field in Pittsburgh. So maybe could we win a 13-10 slap fest in Pittsburgh for the AFC Championship? Yeah, I feel like they could.
Yeah, so, you know, and the funny thing is that field up there probably works against Willie Parker, who's their lead
totally,
back.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, hey, you know what? That's why everybody gets to live the dream about this time of year, unless you live in Cincinnati or Detroit.
You don't like Atlanta?
You know what? I love the whole Atlanta story. Dimitroff and the job he's done. I mean, think about what he did out there. To understand the value of Michael Turner. You know, Matt Ryan coming on the way that he's come on. Sam Baker, they took at that left tackle position, and the job that Mike Mularkey's done with that offense. I mean, that you have to, you know, every once in a while I have to put myself in the place of, you know, what I was thinking in August. And everybody was saying the same thing, that without question, the Atlanta Falcons are, you know, they're the Detroit Lions. You know, they may lose all these games this year. And I remember putting on a preseason tape, which just goes to show how little life I really have if you're watching preseason football. But it was, I sit there and I go, this team does not stink. Look at them. They are professional on offense. Look at the spacing in the offensive line. Look at them coming off. Look at the double teams that they're coming up with and getting to the second level on the blocks. Watch this team and watch this son of a gun, Michael Turner, run the football. I mean, he is – you look at him from behind, and he looks like he's about 4 foot tall and about 4 feet wide. He looks like a cube running down the field.
Yeah.
And he runs over people. He destroyed San Diego on a tape I watched a few weeks ago. Just ran right over him. And so, in the back of my mind, I have a little cheering interest just because I think the story is so remarkable for them.
Well, in your defense, in my defense, because I thought they'd stink too, nobody knew Matt Ryan. It's just for a rookie quarterback to come in and be that good just doesn't happen. It happens once every 10 years. So,
I think
Flacco's not at that level. We've seen Flacco have a couple stink bombs. Ryan doesn't seem to really have stink bombs. Like, he'll be mediocre, not great, but he hasn't really killed them in a game, which is amazing.
Well, and the other thing is Flacco does, he's not getting to play in that dome either. So, I think that all quarterbacks as we come down the stretch, and Phil Simms tells great stories about this too, that, how many games has he gone to Philadelphia and play against Reggie White and that whole great defense that they had. And you go over there and he said, I would come out of the game and my stats would be 7-for-17 for 129 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. And I'm getting on the bus going, I played a hell of a game today.
Yeah, that was great.
I mean, there are some games like that when Pittsburgh and Baltimore play. You know, Ben Roethlisberger doesn't do much the whole day, and he like he's done all season, puts together a drive in the fourth quarter, and they win the game. And, and Phil's in here talking about him being MVP of the league, because he's done so much in the fourth quarter of these games. So, I think there's something to that. There are, and I think Tony Romo had to learn, I've got to be patient when I go to some of those bad weather cities, and I can't give it away like I did in Pittsburgh. And, it's all part of the education process. But I tell you, going into New York, going into Philadelphia, going into New England, going into Chicago late in the year, it ain't the same kind of football you played in September and October. We got a little different game going on.
Yeah, we've seen the home field advantage definitely turn in the last 2 weeks.
No question.
For the first 12, it was ridiculous. The road teams were just doing whatever they wanted. Let's talk quickly about last thing about Showtime. Inside the NFL, you guys switch networks. Now you have to do they force you to watch Dexter and The Brotherhood and all those shows? Or do you is that not in the contract?
And all the,
yeah.
I've got to admit, I've seen more of them than I ever did in the past.
Oh, excellent.
But it's been fun. I got to tell you, I never knew. Phil Simms doing the games, and I knew Phil a little bit before. He seems like such a calm, rational, even-keeled kind of guy. And the minute the two of us got in front of a camera, I mean, we disagree on just about everything, which is unbelievable. I mean, because we're all watching the same tapes and the same thing. It is, and it's not, people want to know, do we like each other? Do we not? And I'm like, oh, come on. We're just two guys sitting at a bar arguing about football. We're just having fun out there. But it has really been interesting. And I learn something every day when I come in here. I really do. Because Warren knows so much about line play. And we were on a plane together going to the last game that we called in Chicago. And I said, here's a notepad, here's a piece of paper. I want you to show me everything you can show me about Tampa 2. And I thought I knew what Tampa 2 defense was. I didn't know anything. Nothing. I'm telling you, I was embarrassed by the time he got finished. I was like, wow, I didn't know there was that much to it. I just didn't understand. And until you can get inside somebody's head that's playing that particular offense or that particular defense, you just don't get it.
So the internet rumors aren't true that you held a team meeting because you felt James Brown was setting Phil Simms up more than you. And you got the other guy, you got Warren involved and a couple other guys. That's not true?
I was a little jealous of the whole time. You know what? This is PE for me.
Yeah.
Getting ready for a game is work. People have no idea. I'm telling you, you, for the most part, especially because these Thursday games, I'm up to 1 o'clock in the morning and I wake back up at 7, and you know, just to try and get ready on a short week is just, it's like the teams, you know, it's almost impossible. And but it is, to go to the game site and to talk with the players and the coaches, and you know, it's unbelievable. I've been around this game my entire life. It's the only thing I've done. It's the only job I've ever had in my life.
All right, so NFL Network Thursday night, what's the game?
NFL Network, we do Jacksonville hosting Indy this week. If Indy wins, they lock up the 5 seed.
It's not a bad game. I mean, you've had a couple stinkers, and last week's was pretty good.
Yeah,
you haven't had like a classic. You haven't had a great one.
Well, you know what? The Jets and Patriots was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one.
That was pretty good. But
yeah.
San Diego, Oakland made up for New England, New York.
That was bad.
That was tough.
Pittsburgh Cincy was no classic either.
No, that wasn't a classic.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Thank you for your time. Good luck with everything and continue to crank it out.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Well, I hate to bother our buddy Jacko at work 2 weeks in a row. But if the Yankees are going to continue to hand out terrible contracts, we have to keep calling them. There's no remorse. AJ Burnett, $82.5 million for 5 years. If I think Jacko might have even said on the podcast, $60 million would have been too much for him. So it'll be interesting to see his reaction, how he talks himself into it. Let's call him at work right now.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny.
Oh, boy. Oh, golly.
You
sound
good.
A little fired up.
It's so good.
Did you get your AJ Burnett jersey already? Is that why you're excited?
It's so good. Go ahead, do it. It's not my money. Who cares? Money's no object. Go ahead, do the whole thing.
Well, that's pretty much, you've made my argument for me. Good talking with you. Talk to you next week. I mean, the reality is, I'm going to talk myself into this in front of the American public right now. I would be outraged by this if they had traded somebody for him. Like, if it was like a Cano for Burnett trade or even prospects for Burnett, I'd be outraged. But as you knew I was going to say, it is just money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he is an upgrade over, we're not running Sidney Ponson out there this year. Until he gets hurt, in which case then we are going to be calling Sidney or Daryl Rasner. So it's an upgrade. It's a shot, you know? It's like a lottery ticket. It's an $82.5 million lottery ticket. It might pay off, it might not pay off. That's the way it works.
So the only
way it's really an apocalypse is if they, because they spent this money on him, they cannot now go out and get a bat, which they desperately need another bat, be it Teixeira or Manny or some other, you know, through trade, somebody that can protect A-Rod in the lineup. Because you look at their lineup right now, it's got some holes in it.
Oh, is that your expert opinion?
Yeah. Obviously, it's got some holes in it.
Mm.
But, I mean, in terms of a crapshoot, yeah, I know he could be an $82 million Carl Pavano, but he has pitched well against the Red Sox. He has a pretty good record against the American League. He pitched great against the Yankees. So, I mean, he's got a changeup working now. I read that in ESPN.com. He's got a changeup working. He can make his fastball, you know, a lot craftier.
Sure.
So there you go.
Well, I'll tell you this. The only thing I could potentially enjoy more than a $40 million Carl Pavano
is
the $82 million Carl Pavano.
Because
I love the $40 million Carl. I can't say Carl for some reason.
It's all right.
The $40 million Pavano was really one of my favorite $40 million anythings.
But the thing is, having said that, and I know that was a disastrous signing, obviously it was horrific, but the Yankees have pretty much weathered the storm with Carl Pavano and Kayagawa both on the payroll. I mean, how much did it really hurt them by having those guys? It was just money, and it's not my money. So the fact that when I go to the stadium, I'm going to have to pay $10 for a beer instead of $9.50, I'm worth paying 50 more cents in the off chance that A.J. Burnett gets me 15, 16 wins next year. I'll take the chance on that. That's worth 50 cents a beer to me.
Would you have, I mean, a week ago, you wouldn't have even wanted to pay $60 million for him.
I know. I've told you. I'm talking myself into it as we speak.
I'm
fooling myself.
I'd like some reaction from you for these quotes from Keith Law, who writes an excellent column blog for ESPN.com. He's worked for the Blue Jays.
This probably is something you've already sent me, but that's okay. Go ahead. Some of it, I think.
There are two major drawbacks to a Burnett signing of more than 1 year. One is that he always doesn't always pitch up to his stuff. Last year, he had a 4.96 ERA at the All-Star break, and over 3 years with Toronto, he didn't post a single season ERA under 3.75. He hasn't pitched like blah, blah, blah. If he pitches like that over full season, the other is the frequency with which he takes the mound. Burnett has, with some reason, earned a reputation as a pitcher who only pitch if his arm feels 100%, even though most pitchers pitch from time to time with some soreness or mild discomfort.
Yeah, that part hurt. That part bothers him.
As a result, he's only thrown 200 innings in a season three times, parentheses, the aforementioned years when there was money at stake, end of parentheses, and has only made 30 starts in a season twice. An optimistic forecast would only give him 125 or so starts across the 5 years of his contract with the Yankees.
Oh, I mean, the fourth and fifth years of this contract are a complete disaster. I mean, there's just no hope for that. There's just no hope. But you're just hoping to get something out of him this year and something next year, maybe a little something in the third year. Mm-hmm. I agree. Cashman's spending money like a drunken sailor. But versus Sidney Ponson or Daryl Rasner, I'll take my chances with A.J. Burnett. Hopefully he's reading all these articles and he's, come out something to prove. Nobody believed in me, that type of thing, when they're pouring champagne over him in the locker room, in October.
Well, I would say that at the very least, if you're going to talk yourself into that, he'll give you what Pettit gave you last year, which was like, what?
14-14 and a ERA of 5-ish.
Hey, that's $80 million right there.
Sure, right.
If you can duplicate that for 5 years, I think you're feeling pretty good.
I mean, the thing is, he's not going to be like a number one or a number two starter because they have Sabathia and Wong. He's going to be like a number three starter. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can even push him back to four. I mean, Pettit comes back, he and Pettit will be 3-4, and you have Jabba in five, unless they move Jabba to the bullpen and bring up Phil Hughes. But it's not it's a competent rotation. I'd be happier if there was more offense to it, but maybe they can hire a sports psychologist that can hypnotize AJ so that he thinks he has 5 1-year contracts.
Could that work?
Maybe everyone in the locker room, they just hypnotized him, and everyone's like, it's your walk year. He's like, it is? And they're like, yes, it is. Now go pitch yourself a winner.
You got to get a new contract, AJ.
Exactly. I thought I signed a 5-year deal. No, it was a 1-year deal. Really? Yeah.
It was 1 year with a player option for the second one, but we could be a free agent.
Yeah, that's what they have to talk him into.
I got to ask you, I mean, I poked fun at my good friend Theo Epstein last week for the way the media covers him with kid gloves.
All right.
And, he's won two World Series, and it's not like he's doing a bad job. I'm just saying, my point last week was that if he makes a bad move or a bad signing or an inexplicable move or whatever, the media just will not call him out on it.
Right.
With Cashman,
it's
the moves that he makes... Mm. I really feel like you and I on the phone for like 5 minutes a week could have made the same moves.
Yeah.
We need a pitcher. Oh, well, how much does AJ Burnett want? Well, he said he'll sign it. All right, well, we'll give him $82 million. Like, it seems like he puts no thought into anything.
No, I know. And when he tries to explain himself, like his thought process, I just don't understand it. I mean, the thing with Santana last year, he hyped up was like, oh my God, we'd have to pay and give up prospects. But the prospects have turned out to not be diamonds in the rough.
Right.
So, and then, they were like, well, if you go out and get Sabathia this year, is that an admission that you dropped the ball with Santana? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, no, it doesn't mean that at all. Well, obviously it does when you're bidding against yourself and you had to give him another $20 million in the seventh year or sixth year. Yeah. I mean, something tells me, I think you admit, geez, we should have had Santana last year,
Well, and also they threw away the 2008 season.
Exactly, right.
The swing of what Phil Hughes and Ian Kennedy gave them versus what Santana would have given them was probably, what do you say, conservative estimate, 10 wins?
Yeah, probably.
Definitely.
And the thing is, I mean, that's the other thing, like the whole rationale for the season, like the whole mindset of the organization is like, now we're going to focus on youth. We've had too many of these long-term dead-end contracts for old over-the-hill guys. Mm-hmm. We're going to go young, and that worked for about 5 minutes, and now it's like, no, guess what? How's Mike Cameron? What's he getting in here,
Did you guys get Mike Cameron?
Not yet, but they're talking about a trade for Melky Cabrera and Kayagawa to the Brewers for Mike Cameron, who will be then the temporary solution in center field until this minor leaguer Austin Jackson is ready, who allegedly hit like 250 and had 100 strikeouts in Double A. I read online, so
Yeah, he's another one of those dubious Red Sox Yankee prospects.
Yeah, they're Austin
Jackson,
fantastic.
Austin Jackson. It's right. Like Jose Tabata.
Exactly.
Well, we always talk about the Yankees a little too much when you're on. I thought I was going to throw out some free agent signings.
Well, how about if you're the Brewers, though, the other side of that trade? If you're the Milwaukee Brewers, Cece Sabathia was like, set the city on fire, brought you into the playoffs. And I love Milwaukee. We had a great time out there 2 years ago. I don't want to bash Milwaukee. But having said that, let me bash Milwaukee. Because now they're going to go out and get, like, this is your big trade, is to get, we're going to get rid of Cameron and save money, but we're going to bring in Melky Cabrera and Kayagawa.
Well, if you look at it from a basketball standpoint, it would be the equivalent of they trade Cece Sabathia and Mike Cameron for Kayagawa, Melky Cabrera, and our number one pick.
Right.
Like Mark Stein's head would explode if that was an NBA trade. Like, what?
Right.
It's just terrible. It's exactly. Like the all-time salary dump.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Kayagawa, you know. He couldn't pitch on my softball team, and they're going to bring him in. And I mean, I guess he'd be in the mix to be a starter there.
That is not a good mix.
Ugly.
Whoa. That's a mix I don't want to be involved in.
Bad news is we lost Sabathia. Good news, here comes Kayagawa.
He's dyed his hair a special green color.
The good news is it's going to drive up the sales of Line and Kugel beer in their stadium. So that'll help the good people at Line and Kugel.
He might have like a nervous breakdown in Wisconsin. Kayagawa.
I don't know. You think so? It's pretty laid back.
What do you do if you're Kayagawa and you lived your whole life in Japan and now you're in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's probably
what happens to you.
Not a lot of cultural assimilation for Kay.
Let's get your take on a couple of these free agent signings.
Okay.
Kerry Wood, Cleveland Indians, 2 years, $20.5 million.
Oof. I mean, that's a huge. I mean, talk about injury risk. I mean. Talk about a Pavano-like figure, and the Indians are not a big market franchise, or they're not a franchise that spends any money.
Yeah.
So that's one where they're laying out $20 million, and he's like their big signing probably for like the next 2 years.
I'm going to say that's this year's Gagne signing.
Kerry Wood in the American League of all things, too.
Yeah.
I mean, good luck with that, Kerry, in a fairly small ballpark.
With arm trouble. I feel bad for the Indians fans because they just lived through 2 years of Joe Borowski.
Right.
And now they have Kerry Wood, who, like, with every pitch, you're waiting for his arm to just come flying off, hit the backstop.
And they had the Fausto Carmona disaster as a closer when he blew, like, two games in a row to the Red Sox or whatever in that crucial series down the line, you know?
I'm trying to remember. Who's the last good Indians closer? Was it Jose Mesa who wasn't
good?
Yeah,
he was
He
could
have been the last one, right? Who did they have in the early part of the decade?
No, he was there for a while. That was, I mean, when they went to the World Series, he was their guy, right?
Yeah, that was late 90s.
That was, like 95.
Oh, I can't remember a single effective Indians call. I'm sure there is one, and I'm sure I'm going to get emails.
We'll get all kinds of emails now. Like,
How do you not remember Joe Schmo? All right, so Raul Ibanez.
Yeah.
I like this one. 3 years, $30 million going to the Phillies.
People love Raul Ibanez. You know, he got him out of Seattle, so he's got to be happy with that.
I like this one.
The Phillies. This World Series champ's a savvy move. And they're going to let that means the end of Pat the Bat, right?
Oh, they already took him behind the stadium and shot him.
He's all set in Philly.
Thanks,
memories.
I always thought Ibanez was scary when he played the Red Sox. And I also like getting the guy who's like been basically in purgatory for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's on the champs and they're like, hey, we like him. We want to ring for him. Supposedly he's a great guy too. I was actually kind of secretly hoping, even though there was no conceivable way it would work, but I would have enjoyed him in the Red Sox somehow.
He goes from the black hole that is the Seattle sports scene, my apologies to your editor, and now he goes to the vibrant world of Philadelphia. Mm. And how about Cole Hamels going on The Fan the other day and saying, the Mets are basically chokers, and until they prove otherwise, we'll always consider them chokers.
And the Mets fans all agreed.
Pretty much are like, yeah.
Cole made some good points. Would you rather pay Raul Ibanez 3 years, $30 million, or J.D. Drew... Three years, $42 million. I'm just curious.
Personally, I'd go with the Ibanez signing, but okay. Theo must know something that I don't know. I'm sure it was a good call by him. He knows what he's doing.
Well, that is. I don't remember if I said this last week or not, but this is my prediction for how this whole Teixeira thing's going to turn out. I've successfully learned how to pronounce his name after 9 years.
That's good.
I think that this is going to play out like my dad's conspiracy theory about J.D. Drew and Dice K, where they threw all this money at J.D. Drew, and then Boris agreed to take this low ball offer for Daisuke, who basically, what is it, like 3 years, $23 million or something low. I think they're going to make this deal that he's going to steer Teixeira to the Red Sox for like 8 years, $170 million. And as part of that agreement, he will, they have to pay Veritek like 3 years, $20 million with a club option of, you know, $4 million buyout for year four. Some ridiculous offer that he could never get anywhere else.
So he'll still tell Teixeira there, but it means that it gets a contract for Veritek.
Yes, and he'll tell Teixeira, hey, look, this is the best fit for you. These guys love you. This is a great lineup, Boston. And he does the same Weasley stuff he always does, where he's pushing this guy really so he can get the extra $24 million Veritek contract, because the money won't be different. But he'll sell Teixeira on the Red Sox. And supposedly Lowell's hip is a little more hurt than people think, and they're worried about that. So maybe he becomes the DH against lefties. But I think this is how that plays out.
I mean, he has basically no trade value, Lowell, right? They can't trade him with that contract and his age.
It's funny, yeah, bum hip, not really what people are looking for $12 million a year.
not so much. You know, the Red Sox really should just give Teixeira and Veritek whatever they want, because they have their new gimmick of new hats and new alternate road jerseys. Another vacuum way to vacuum people's money out of their pockets. Every gullible Red Sox fan, I have to go get a new jersey and a new hat. More money for Lucchino and Warner, God forbid, and Henry, God forbid they spend it on players. Just put that in your pocket.
It's been a real test of my love for the Red Sox these last couple of years.
I mean, hat with the Sox on it, really? Really?
Well, really with Seth and Avery. At some point, they've just got to all agree that they've made enough money.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You've built, you know, new seats no one ever thought of. You have gimmicks like you have to buy a membership in a nation to vote on a governor or like a president. It's a freaking joke. And, you know, everything is like just a way to suck money out of your wallet to get into the Fenway. Everything they've turned it into, like, a, you know, an amusement park. Any way you can get in there, they will get money out of you. Not enough. Now we have to have alternate jerseys like some mediocre NBA team.
I know. It's like one of the oldest franchises in baseball. They will get a sponsor for anything. Yeah. I mean, seriously, if somebody came to them with an idea to get glory holes sponsored in the men's bathroom, they would freaking slap a banner on top of them. They don't care. Anything to make like $10.
They would.
They don't care.
All the while whining about the Yankees spending money on free agents. Like, you know, you're right, because the Red Sox barely are scraping by. Like, no money at all in that franchise. Give me a freaking break.
We are the Yankees.
Red jerseys, blue jerseys, my God.
We are the Yankees. We've become the Yankees.
I will say this. I kind of do like the new road uniforms, though, which are kind of the old school ones, I guess. But then they slap the socks on the arm. It's not bad, though.
I was talking about this with Damashek. My one issue here is that we have the name Red in our name.
Mm.
And just going with the all blue.
Yeah.
It sits wrong with me.
Yeah, that's a good point. They should go back to the old hats like they wore in the 70s, the red hats with the blue brim. Probably too many bad memories associated with those, though. But
yeah, that's not – I love that those old unis, but you're right. It is – you want like a fresh start.
See, I'm kind of like the old school jersey thing. Like, I loathe the Patriots, but I wish that they – like, their old uniforms are so much better than the ones they wear now.
I know, but we had a lot of bad memories in those uniforms.
Yeah, you know, but you've erased all that. The red, the bright red, the Pat the Patriot, it's the way to go. Keep it
old
school. Hold
on. We got a couple more.
I'm sorry.
More transactions.
We had a digression there, my bad.
How'd you feel about J.J. Putz? J.J. Poots. I'm sorry.
Careful.
J.J. Poots becoming the Mets' eighth inning setup guy.
Well, the Mets have had no bullpen for years and have choked away 2 years in a row now. So you would think this has to work. Like, two competent closers from the American League going to the National League, well, they'll probably improve. And you got like two closers, the eighth, ninth inning guy. The one problem with that is that if the eighth inning guy Poots is like, I should be the closer.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, how is he happy just being like K-Rod's lawn jockey, basically?
When there's more money as closers and glory and everything else.
Yeah, K-Rod's like, hey Poots, after you set up the game for me, can you get me a diet soda?
You think they could have a divided locker room, like K-Rod blows two in a row or something, and Poots is like whispering to guys like David Wright, like, you know, I'd have closed that game out.
I got to say, K-Rod has not deserved enough acclaim for realizing that it was time to go to the National League.
Yeah, smart move.
Very smart. Very smart.
Well played.
I wish there was like a version of the National League for sports websites that I could go to where it became clear, like, hey, I'm moving into a different phase of my career. I might only have like 10 good columns in me a year. I'm ready for this website now. Like, that's basically what the National League is.
Right. I get to pitch the pitchers? Really?
So it's not going to matter that my fastball is only 91 miles an hour? Oh, this is great.
yeah, that's the one problem.
How about this trade? I thought this was a sneaky trade by the Devil Rays. I'm not calling them the Rays. I'm calling them the Devil Rays. Screw them. They continue to make these sneaky little fantasy trades where I've had both of the guys on my team, and I know it's a great trade. So they trade Edwin Jackson, who, you know, could not even pitch for them in the playoffs, basically.
Right.
Who was just a heart attack. And they get Matt Joyce, who hits the crap out of the ball, and I thought was like a real sleeper. He's only 24. I don't know how they continue to be allowed to make these trades.
They got rid of an extra part that they had to get rid of to make room for David Price. Is his name David Price?
Yes.
The guy that was the lights out in the ALCS. And they had to get rid of a pitcher. And Jackson was competent, but it's like trading when the stock is high and it's about to decline. I mean, you know, they sold him at the perfect right time, I think. Traded him at the perfect right time. And they get a bat, which they needed. So, yeah, the Rays. Who's their GM?
The Rays GM,
he's smart, whoever he is. We should be able to know his name.
Well, someday when I write about sports for a living, I'll know all these names.
That's a good point.
The Tigers got Jared Laird.
Yeah, from the Rangers.
Jared Laird.
Yeah.
Who, you know, is in the Red Sox mix for catchers and really left me just limp.
One of the happiest things I ever read was, speaking of the Tigers, is that there was some rumors about a Tigers-Red Sox trade where Dontrelle Willis would be involved.
Oh, my God.
I was so excited. I was, like, every night on my knees praying, please let that happen. Please let Dontrelle Willis go to the Red Sox.
It was great about Dontrelle Willis is the Tigers trade for him. They gave him $37.5 million or whatever they gave him.
Right.
So we have my AL-only fantasy league where literally by the end of the thing, anybody is going for, like, $1, $2. Like, you talk yourself into every terrible guy. He does not go in the auction. And we're having our reserve draft, which is – you know, it's like snake fashion. It's basically the dregs of the American League at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody took Dontrelle in the third round. Actually, it was me. I took Dontrelle. And everybody's heckling me and making fun of me. I'm like, guys, I'm throwing darts here. Like, I don't know what. All these guys are terrible. But that's how bad he was.
You're in the third round of, like, a dregs draft, and you still got heckled for taking him. Like, yeah. That's where Dontrelle has sunk to.
I mean, dead guys were going in this draft. That Tigers guy should have been fired immediately. But
I remember last year when they made those moves, and they were like, oh, this is it. Tigers World Series. Get your tickets now, you know?
One last one.
All right.
This is my favorite of the offseason. Edgar Renteria to the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
Two years, $18.5
million. Haven't the good people of San Francisco suffered enough with Barry Zito? Did they really deserve Edgar Renteria?
Well, Edgar's coming off a good year. In 2008, he hit .270, .317 on base, .382 slugging. His slugging dropped almost 100 points from the year before. 10 homers, 55 RBI, 6 stolen bases, 503 at bats.
Edgar, another one going to the National League, though. Good move by him.
Wasn't he already there? Where was he? Oh, he's in the Tigers? Where was
he
last year? Oh, yeah, he was in the Tigers. Man. I mean, after the Zito signing, you signed Edgar Renteria for $18.5
million? I mean, the funniest thing in the world was I actually saw this. It was on the scroll on the bottom of ESPN, and it said, like, Edgar Renteria, Giants still negotiating or deal not finalized or something. And I'm like, what is Edgar Renteria possibly waiting for? If you're Edgar Renteria and people offer you, like, $20,000, you should be like, where do I sign? And I'm like, and he's like, $18 million? Really?
Well, that gets my – that wins the award. And I just don't think we're going to top it. I don't see anybody topping that one. When you could pay $18.5 million for a guy who will give you the exact same stats as somebody that you could have paid $500,000.
It makes the AJ Burnett deal look savvy.
Does. Somehow AJ wasn't the worst signing of the year.
There you go.
My dad made one point about AJ. He does seem to get it up for the Red Sox.
Well, that's just it. He pitched a great game. He pitched a couple of great games against the Red Sox this year. Yeah. That got me excited, you know? So
he does.
That's good. He pitches well against the Sox. And conversely, CC does not, unfortunately.
No, he doesn't.
So a little two sides of the coin on that one, unfortunately. But
any last words from Mike Messina?
Mike, thanks for the memories. I loved it when you almost had a perfect game against the Red Sox until Carl Everett got a base hit in the ninth.
Yeah.
I liked your 20 wins. You know, he was a really cerebral guy, Mike Mussina, because he went to Stanford.
Yeah.
There's a famous story I read about the Yankees a couple years ago got really into playing the game Connect Four.
Yeah.
And Mike Mussina came by and, like, derisively looked at the box and was like, ages eight and up, huh? He was like one of those guys. Tino Martinez defensively said, we're the up, and, like, continued to play Connect Four against Jeter or whatever.
Eating up, huh? Yeah, he sounded like a real...
he's like one of those guys, you know?
He sounded like a word that rhymes with Rick.
Yeah. I don't think he was the most popular guy in the clubhouse when Giambi's like wearing a thong and sucking down Jack Daniels or whatever, you know? Mussina's like, you know, thumbing through some book, you know?
I would say the upgrade personality-wise from Mussina to CeCe is large.
Yeah, that probably helps a little.
No pun intended.
Yeah. A little clubhouse camaraderie. But having said that, Moose was a good pitcher. I mean, he, you know, never got the ring, but...
CeCe seems like the guy who, after the game, will be perfectly willing to go to you with the all-night diner.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah. Where are you guys going? Yeah. Absolutely. Right. I'll have my limo driver drive us.
I could see him totally walking around, like, naked in the locker room, too. Like, there's just no question. CeCe's like, you know, doing a slap dance or something in the locker room, you know?
Remember the... Sparky Lyle, the great, he used to sit on birthday cakes. He was the all-time greatest baseball teammate. Sparky sat on a birthday cake.
Exactly.
What an era.
Right.
And how did we not think of that in college? I would have loved to have sat on a birthday cake.
We should have. We weren't, you know, we just didn't know.
Yeah. All right, Johnny, I'm going to let you go.
Thanks, buddy.
Talk to you soon. Congrats on AJ. Congrats on CC. Any other acronym initial guys you guys are going to sign or no?
I don't know. We'll see whoever else is out there. We already lost JJ Poots to the Mets, so we couldn't get JJ, AJ, and CC. That would be good.
Right.
Maybe like a boy band.
Maybe there's a JP. Or maybe you get CJ Wilson, maybe?
All right. Maybe. We'll see who else. Maybe
interesting direction.
Maybe when they get Manny, what's Manny's middle initial? They can call him like MR Ramirez or whatever, you know?
I really, really don't think Manny is a middle initial. I think it's just Manny Ramirez. That's his birth certificate.
It's sad. The initials won't work there then. All right.
Johnny, happy holidays. Say hi to Santa for us. All right.
All right.
So I get to Santa. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.